Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. It's Ask Anything Wednesday. You get to set the agenda. We'll talk about what is on your mind. To give us a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We cover just about anything across the waterfront, religion, politics, theology, doctrine, culture, you name it. The number 877-893-8255. First, a review of some big issues in the news, and of course, we're all watching the development and the trajectory of Hurricane Wilma, the 21st named storm of the 2005 hurricane season. Folks, this is big. This storm, at one point in the last 24 hours, became the strongest hurricane ever recorded. It is now a Category 5 hurricane with the highest sustained winds of about 160 miles per hour, and it is by any measure a killer storm, and it appears to be headed in this extreme northeasterly trajectory towards the west coast of Florida. It is, of course, very early to predict exactly where the landfall might come and what this might mean, but we do know that this is a powerful storm, and we're looking at the third Category 5 hurricane of the 2005 season, and we need to be praying that this will not be a devastating storm wherever it hits. But it's another reminder to us of just how powerful these storms can be. And, you know, we in our human scale are very small. Our cities, our construction, our civilizations, very small against the scale of a storm like this. Whether it is the earthquake on the Pakistani-Indian border, or it is the tsunami in the Indian Ocean Basin, or the hurricanes that we've experienced in North America, especially on the Gulf Coast this past year, we are reminded that this is an incredible universe that God has made. That this planet is the actual arena of the playing out of forces that are bigger than anything we can imagine. We can take a look at it from the satellites in outer space. We can fly through it with these special Hurricane Hunter airplanes. We can measure its winds. We can judge its trajectory. But in the final analysis, this is one of the rare things on planet Earth that we can do absolutely nothing about. And that's why right now there are so many people that are simply getting out of the way. In Iraq, it's not a natural disaster, but a moral disaster that is very much front and center in the nation's news. It's our news as well. We're talking about the trial of Saddam Hussein today. He entered the courtroom there in Baghdad, and as you would expect, it was a show. Saddam Hussein defied the judge, made very clear that he did not accept the legitimacy of the court. He defiantly faced Iraqi judges in his heavily guarded courthouse in central Baghdad. He pleaded not guilty to charges for mass executions that were dated back to 1982. The former Iraqi dictator is on trial for the execution of more than 140 men and teenage boys from the mostly Shiite market town of Dujail, which is 35 miles north of Baghdad. This following what was assumed to be a failed assassination attempt on Mr. Hussein. There's a lot more going on here. There are bigger crimes that are certainly to be answered for. Saddam Hussein was one of the most brutal dictators of the 20th and into the 21st centuries. But we need to remind ourselves that this is not just about justice in Iraq. It's not just about justice for Saddam Hussein. This is the big question of whether we as human beings can actually come even close to achieving justice in the face of genocide, of the tyranny of an awful autocrat and dictator like Saddam Hussein. That is an ongoing question. Now, the headlines on the editorial pages all over the world, from the Times of London to the New York Times, the Washington Post, you name it, what they're looking at is that Iraqi justice is on trial as well as Saddam Hussein. And, of course, that's right. But one of the frustrations I face as I look at this is that this court is going to be criticized no matter what it does, no matter how it adjudicates this case, no matter what verdict is reached, it is going to be criticized and roundly so. There is no way that it can do its work without suffering some form of criticism. There are those that will question the court's legitimacy. There are others that will suggest that an international tribunal should have done the judging here. I responded earlier today to that suggestion by simply uttering one name, Slobodan Milosevic. That ought to be conclusive proof that these international tribunals are incompetent at actually even reaching a verdict. We'll be following this trial with you. It is certain to be the arena of some theatrics, but we do need to be reminded again and again that the responsibility of justice in this fallen world means that we must do the very best that we can, knowing that our justice will never be perfect. But ladies and gentlemen, that's why the Christian worldview reminds us over and over again that ultimate justice and ultimate vindication is God's right and power alone. Every single verdict reached by every single human court is going to be set right, is going to be impartial, is going to be unfulfilled. It will have to be set right in the age to come by the judge of all the living and the dead, the creator of the universe, and only then will true justice be achieved. Folks, are you scared yet concerning the dimensions of the brave new world? I posted on my weblog overnight a story from The Independent in London indicating that British citizens are desperate now to halt the aging process, and they're being injected with the stem cells of aborted human fetuses at a clinic on Barbados that charges about £15,000, that's about $30,000 plus, for a controversial new cosmetic treatment. Despite warnings from biologists in the United Kingdom that the process is unproven and could be harmful, dozens of British women have flown to Barbados in the hope that the injections will make them forever young and possibly even boost their sex drive. The paper reported that similar treatments are now available in Ecuador, Russia, and Ukraine. Scientists have been working on these stem cell treatments, and they're deriving the materials from aborted human fetuses, and they're now promising that the injection of these stem cells can halt or reverse the aging process, add beauty, and it's a fountain of youth argument that certainly will be appealing to many, but it is a false hope. Far more important than that, far exceeding the question of the medical efficacy of such treatments, is the horror of the fact that they are turning human fetuses into factories for stem cells for medical treatments. This is the ultimate smile on the face of the culture of death. We will kill, and we will make you embrace killing because of the promise that some good will come out of it, even if it is merely a cosmetic treatment. Ladies and gentlemen, the moment we begin to use human beings at whatever stage of development as factories for parts, for organs, for tissues, for stem cells, or for anything else, we have undermined the very foundation of human dignity. If it's aborted fetuses today, the big question, of course, is who will it be next? Also, at my commentary at the site albertmuller.com, just overnight, I posted a major commentary on an article by James Q. Wilson. He's a criminologist and public policy expert. He's one of the most influential public intellectuals in America. In his new article, he talks about loyalty and marriage. And he says the breakdown of marriage is a larger part, is a picture of the larger loss of loyalty in the culture, and loyalty is necessary in order for civilization to work. If we are not loyal to each other, if we do not trust each other, if we cannot trust each other, then the very project of civilization falls apart. James Q. Wilson is exactly right to point to marriage and to family emerging out of marriage as the arena in which we learn that loyalty. We learn loyalty to parents as our parents demonstrate loyalty to us as children. We learn loyalty to peers first by learning loyalty to siblings. We learn loyalty to the larger extended family, and then, by extension, we learn loyalty to the larger culture, the civilization, the country, the community, the city. If we do not learn those lessons early, those lessons may never be learned. James Q. Wilson is a sociologist. He really is one of the most influential thinkers in America. His ideas on criminology and on reversing the crime trends were foundational to what New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani did in terms of fixing broken windows and cleaning up the sidewalks and getting homeless persons off the street where they were preying on citizens. James Q. Wilson argued that though things are allowed to continue, if the society appears to have little concern for the perpetuation of its own stability, then criminals will take advantage. In this article, he also talks about the problem of boys being raised without dads, making very clear that the statistics speak powerfully. A boy growing up without a father, he says they're more likely to join gangs, more likely to be dropouts from school, to be unemployed. And he says this stays a constant regardless of family income. You know, this just reminds us once again that the family is not some mere product of social evolution. It is God's plan for our health, for our happiness. It is not just about those within the family. It's about the larger culture and the civilization itself. Folks, we'll talk about what's on your mind. The phone number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Hello, America. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. This is a very, very fun part of the week because right here you get to set the agenda. Right in the center of the week is Ask Anything Wednesday. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to go to Claudia first, calling from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Claudia, your turn.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. And God bless you in the work and the service that you provide to us. My question is... if you could offer any insight on the Christian perspective on multi-level marketing schemes and how one might go about ministering to people who are caught up in these kinds of programs.
Claudia, what an interesting question. I appreciate your very kind comment at the beginning, and I appreciate your question. I think this is probably something that a lot of people have been thinking about because these programs are all over the place, as a matter of fact. Let me just offer a couple of points. Claudia, hang on if you can, because I'd love to have you back. But let me just offer a couple of points that might be helpful here. Number one, the multi-level marketing schemes are really a product of a capitalist economy with a consumer-driven mechanism. It can make sense to do this because basically anyone can become his or her own company this way. But the big issue for me is the integrity that must be involved in any true economic transaction. You know, the Bible is just very clear about the importance of equity and justice. And that means there must be a fair exchange. There must be a real product or a real service that is genuinely needed and desired. And there must be an equity that is involved in someone paying for this service. The multi-level issues, I mean, in some sense, you could point to the larger economy. It's multi-level as well. But when it comes down to the personal level, that's where the multi-level part becomes very, very interesting. You know, if you were to take, say, even just Walmart or something like that, and you were to trace it back through all of its suppliers and all the rest, there would be level after level. But they're big companies serving bigger companies, and so it doesn't have the same complications as when it comes down to the personal level, where you may have people in the same family or in a circle of friends and all the rest. And the fact is that the only way to make money is that people downstream or downline from you are buying the product and are getting others to sell the product. And so I think one of my big problems here, Claudia, is that there's a real danger that this can become a real interference in friendships and in relationships. And so the first issue is, are we selling a real product or are we offering a real service that people actually need? And is it a fair representation in terms of the exchange? Are we actually delivering what we say we're delivering? And there are no doubt some in which case there would be an authentic product or a genuine service that someone would really want. But then, you know, what are we trading on in terms of this? Are we going to predicate our personal relationships on the financial relationship here? That's where I think it gets very sticky. And I can tell you, Claudia, and I know this will be controversial in some circles, but I'm just going to tell you, I have seen churches and Bible studies and Christian organizations just ripped all over the place in terms of relationships because these things can enter in. I don't want my closest personal relationships dependent upon financial transactions. And I think that's the big issue. I'm not saying that Christians should never be involved in these things because there may be a way to do it that would shield such relationships from the kind of injury that can come by the economic transaction. I am saying that I think we would have to be very, very careful. And I want to say that with a lot of sympathy, because there are people out there who need additional income, and they're looking at the fact that this can be done from home or in the spare time. But, you know, the big issue is there are a lot more people that get disappointed because of some issues just that are involved in relationships and all the rest. So I would just really suggest caution. I think that's the big thing. Claudia, does that make any sense?
It does make sense. I think that the deeper, and you touched on a lot of things that I've seen, and I think some of the deeper things that concern me are obviously the personality changes as the goals that what you have your sights set on kind of shift, it seems like, in a lot of applications from Christ-likeness to what can I do to become wealthy. And then I guess my concern is then the danger of switching the God that you serve from serving God to serving money.
Yeah, Claudia, I want to acknowledge right up front that I'm sure that can happen under any kind of economic system or any kind of hope for gain. And it is tragic to see that develop in any context. But, you know, I think to me the big issue is, why does this person want a relationship with me? On what is that relationship based? Is it an economic transaction? Well, if so, you know, that's a very different picture than if it is based upon trust, mutual interest, a common faith, the bonds of blood and kin and affection and all the rest. And I think that's where we have to be extremely careful. Claudia, a very, very thoughtful question, and one we have not had before. But I'm sure there are others who've had that question very much on their minds. Folks, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. It's Ask Anything Wednesday, and you get to set the agenda. We've had some other questions that have come up just in recent days that were sent in by the Internet. One had to do with a man of another very interesting question. He said this, describing a complex family situation. What do you do when you know someone, it could be a coworker, a neighbor, who is not a believer, who uses the Lord's name in vain, who really tramples upon Christianity, makes light of spiritual things, and then asks you to pray for them? Well, here's my suggestion. Pray for them. Help them to understand the utter inconsistency of asking you to pray, even as they trample on the very substance of your faith. But you know, the Christian witness is to pray for people who don't deserve to be prayed for. And how in the world do we judge what deserved means anyway? Grace is about the fact that we do not get what we deserve. And one of our greatest Christian forms of witness is to show people that that indeed this is the Christian duty, to pray for those who even would abuse us, who would indeed speak spitefully and disrespectfully about our faith. Let's go to Mike calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Mike, your turn.
Dr. Moeller, thanks for having me on. The reason I'm calling, I've been in a lot of discussions with my friends lately about the book of Revelations and whether or not it's to be taken literally. I've read a lot of literature on one side and the other that says it should be taken metaphorically, that John the Revelator was speaking speaking in terms of metaphor versus, you know, that being the actual event. I wanted to know your opinion on that.
Yeah, you know, that's a very interesting question, Mike. And when you say, is it this or is it that, I feel kind of like Yogi Berra, who infamously said, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. You know, that's nonsense, of course. You have to go one way or the other. But when you ask the question, should it be taken literally or metaphorically, I have to say yes. And I don't want to be coy here. I'm not being clever. And that is to say that the book of Revelation is, by its very shape, what's known as apocalyptic literature. And right up front, John tells us that this was a vision that he received from the Lord. And in this vision, there's a lot of symbolism, all the way from lampstands and all the rest. And so there is some sense in which, yes, that's metaphorical. But Mike, don't let anyone tell you it's all metaphorical. It's not. There are some very specific historical truth claims that are revealed in that text. There are very clear claims that aren't, by their very nature, metaphorical. John says, it was revealed to me that this is going to happen. And you can count on it. That's why we have to read all of Scripture, but especially that apocalyptic literature such as the book of Daniel or the book of Revelation, with great care and Christian maturity. And don't let anyone tell you it's all metaphorical. We'll be right back for Ask Anything Wednesday. I'm Albert Mohler.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back. It's Ask Anything Wednesday, and you set the agenda. The phone number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to David calling from Chicago, Illinois, listening on XM Satellite Radio. David, glad to hear from you.
Well, I appreciate you taking my call, Dr. Mohler. I have a question about contemporary Christian artists copying secular songs, some of them indirectly dealing with drug use, and songs that were not meant to praise and worship God, and copying these in their format.
David, that just makes me nervous all over the place. Number one, the associations of music are very important, and everyone understands that. Dictators understand that. The Nazis understood that. That's why they put their martial music before young people in order to help them emotionally to tie into that culture of the Nazi regime. Every great movement has its songs. Every major cultural development has a certain musical style and musical language. And, I think the biggest issue for me, David, has to do with the fact that Christian music that is supposed to convey an authentic Christian message should be free from associations with that which is antithetical to Christianity. And, I think the reality is when most people hear those tunes, they're going to be thinking of those old words. And I think those associations are just very dangerous. I don't see why we would want to do that. I don't see why we would want to bring in something that the world celebrated on its own terms and say, look, we can add some Bible verses or Christian words and transform the song. Let me just go back to the church's first songbook, to the book of Psalms in the Old Testament. Can you imagine David hearing some pagan uttering some kind of poetry and saying, hey, I can add a few words there, and all of a sudden I can end up with the Lord is my shepherd rather than something else? I just don't think so. David, what do you think of this?
Well, in my opinion, a lot of the songs that are being copied, and there are artists out there that are switching the words totally, which I really don't have a problem with. What I do have a problem with is artists that will sing the song basically the way it was written and on a Christian format. And I feel that God has set aside praise and worship, especially in the Old Testament. You see it time and time again where before a battle, he would send out the praise and worship, and then he would fight the battle. So I think it's very important to God, from his standpoint, that he be praised and he be praised for him and him only.
Well, I appreciate your call, David. That's another question we haven't received before, and one a lot of people may be thinking about. Let's go to Dennis, listening on WTBN, calling from Tampa, Florida. Dennis, we pray you don't have any impact here from this Hurricane Wilma, but we're glad to have your call.
Yeah, we're all preparing down here. Nice to talk to you, Dr. Mohler. My comment is about several months ago, you talked about youth needing to getting married sooner in life. I actually talked to a couple of boy students a couple of weeks ago, and they're actually taking it to a level that I'm not sure that you wanted it to go to. They're almost saying that, well, if I don't get married before I get out of college, then I've failed. The mission.
Yeah. Well, Dennis, that's our new policy. No wedding, no graduation. No, of course not. I appreciate your call, Dennis, and that enables me to kind of set the record straight here. And that's one of the dangers of talking about these things. People may misconstrue what you're saying or take it to a level you don't even intend. I think it's far more dangerous, however, not to talk about these things. And I think by any measure, the delay of marriage right now, so late into the 20s, creating an abnormal delay that is virtually without precedent in human history, is a really bad development. And I do want to urge young men to grow up and be ready to get married. Young women, too, although I think the primary problem right now is young men not growing up. They are, in many cases, not encouraged to. Their models don't inculcate that and encourage that. But, you know, Dennis, the point I want to make is that I do believe that by the time a young man or a young woman graduates from college, they should be ready to be married. So if they're not married, it's not a matter that they lack maturity. It just may be that, that for other circumstances, they have not yet found the one they are to marry, even though I think that, again, is not just something you should expect to fall in your lap. But, you know, no, I'm not saying, Dennis, and thank you for allowing this clarification and prompting it by your call, I'm not saying that it is your duty to be married by the time you graduate from college, or even that you have a duty to be married a few weeks after you graduate. I'm suggesting that we should take that as a hallmark in life, that if you're ready for career, and if you're ready for graduate school, and if you're ready for these other challenges in life, why wouldn't you be ready for marriage? And I think it's very important that men take that on, not just as a marker in life, but as a responsibility, unless they've been given the gift of celibacy. Guys, it's up to us to act, to ask, and to lead. I'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Ask Anything Wednesday. The phone number 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. We'll talk about what's on your mind. Let's go to Virginia, listening on WFIA, calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Virginia, welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Moeller, for taking my call. I just wanted to find out, are you having a happy birthday?
Virginia, bless your heart, yes, I am. I really am. I'm getting ready just as soon as this show is over to join my sweet family, and they're going to wish me a happy birthday. They already did. I had breakfast this morning brought to me by Christopher. And, you know, I also was reminded by Christopher that I am now closer to age 90 than to age 1. So there's a little reality that sets in. But, Virginia, thanks for calling. And, yes, I'm having a very happy birthday. Here I am on October the 19th, looking back at 46 years. And that's an amazing thing. Actually, I can't look back at all of them. Honesty compels me to say I don't remember a lot there at the very beginning. But I do know there was a beginning, and I'm thankful for that. Virginia, thanks again for calling. Let's go to Ryan, calling from Columbia, South Carolina, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Ryan, you're up.
Thank you for taking my call. An earlier question that that you answered about you know, modern music being used in worship, things being changed to make it Christian music, kind of raised an issue for me in terms of a hypocrisy within myself. I am not one who would, I guess you could say, would endorse what.
Ryan, you there?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry, your voice got cut off. Just pick back up again. You said you're not one who would endorse.
I'm not one who would endorse across the board praise and worship music as it is used in certain cases today, but at the same time, I'm reminded of both in Scripture and in the history of the church, the history that the church has of taking gospel to people on their own terms and to cultures on their own terms, but with at the same time without compromising the integrity of that gospel.
Yeah, Ryan, hang with me here. If your phone will allow you, hang on here. As I heard the question earlier from David, it was about using the same tunes exactly. It wasn't even about musical styles, and it wasn't, at least as I understood his question, it wasn't about, for instance, just praise and worship music. It was about secular musicians doing songs that had been very popular, and then Christians coming along and picking up those same songs and then slightly changing the words. And I had folks even here in the studio saying this is something that they hear from time to time fairly often. I have to admit, I am not listening to some of those places where such things would be heard. But this is not a new question. This has come up at different points when musical tunes have been picked up with different associations. And my suggestion is not categorical. I'm not saying it could never be right under any circumstances. Because after all, there are only so many tunes out there, I guess you should say. But I would be very careful about music that has a certain association. Ryan, does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay, I appreciate your call. And Ryan's point about the church borrowing from the culture, well, that's always been a pattern. And yet it needs to be one that is very carefully practiced with great biblical discernment. Martin Luther, for instance, the great reformer, He really believed in music, and in the early Reformation there in Germany, there were a lot of songs that were just out there in the culture and the German heritage that Luther picked up and helped put to song, and he put the gospel to music. And so, of course, these things have often happened. And if you look through the hymnal right now, you can find in most churches tunes that have more than one association. For instance, you could have something like God Save the Queen and My Country Tis of Thee, two very different countries with the same tune. You could have something which is an even greater contrast, such as the hymn Glorious Things of Thee Are Spoken, which is, you know, bum, 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 bum. That's as much as I'm going to give you in the musical side. But that's a great, great Christian hymn. But, you know, it was also the very tune that Adolf Hitler and the Nazis picked up for the German national anthem known as Deutschland über alles. And so tunes can often have more than one association. I'm just warning us to be as clear as we possibly can be that our music is distinctively Christian. Folks, you get to set the agenda on this day, and I never know what we're going to talk about, and that's a part of what makes it fun. And so we've been talking about everything from multi-level marketing to music. And that's good, because we as Christians are facing an entire waterfront of issues. And if these questions are not on your mind right now, if you're not talking about them among your family members and in your workplace, then you can be assured that somewhere at some time these are pressing issues. One of the things that impresses me is that we have a Christian conversation that started. And that is something that is altogether healthy. I think of Dennis calling from Florida and asking about what I've been talking about in terms of marriage and the responsibilities of young people to grow into Christian maturity. Boys growing into Christian men, and that means husbands and fathers. Girls growing into Christian women, that being wives and mothers. For the vast majority of males and females, that's what's really important, I think, is that we start the conversation and mutual accountability. And you'll hear me talk about this over and over and over again. The most important conversation about these issues is not what takes place on the airwaves. I'm so glad you're listening to this program, and I want to thank you for joining this conversation. But my greatest hope is that this conversation will be continued in two more important places. One is within your family, around your dinner table. As moms and dads take the responsibility to start the conversation, to guide the conversation, and to help your family, especially your children, learn how to think in distinctively Christian terms. Because if they do not, they will have no idea how to apply the truth of the Christian faith where the water hits the wheels in terms of their own experience in the world. The other place I desperately hope this conversation will be continued and picked up will be in the local church. I have to come back to this again and again and again. God's glory is in Christians banding together in the covenanted community of the local church, where in mutual accountability and in submission to the Word of God, Christians come together and learn how to talk and to think and to discuss and even to debate like Christians. Thinking together about how the truth of God's Word is to be applied to every dimension of life. We as Christians should be helping each other to be more Christian in the workplace, in our professions, in our political and cultural engagements, in our economic life as consumers and as producers. All of this is so very, very important. And if the local church is not helping to foster and to direct that conversation, then it's really abdicating much of its responsibility. So thanks for listening today. I'll be back with some final thoughts, but my greatest hope is that this conversation about whatever issue is really of your foremost concern will be continued around your dinner table and also within your church. I'll be right back. Thanks. So somebody's going to pay for that one. Yes. A reminder once again of chronology and mortality. But in all seriousness, I'm thankful the Lord's given me the ability to enjoy this day and every day behind it. Folks, we get to talk about the most amazing things on this program. And from time to time, we have to talk about some things that that sometimes make people just a little bit nervous, maybe even just a little bit uncomfortable. And earlier in this program, just in a very top segment, I was talking about this research from James Q. Wilson dealing with the social impact of fatherlessness, especially on boys. The statistics speak very, very loudly. Boys without fathers are many times more likely to be involved in gangs, to drop out of school, to be arrested, and all kinds of other statistical indicators point to the absolute importance of a father in a boy's life. And it also is related to the daughter as well. The same statistics indicate that daughters are far more likely to get pregnant as teenagers if they do not have a dad. Well, we've had a listener call, and I've had many others to write and say, well, that's not my son. I'm a single mom raising a young boy, and he's doing just great. Well, Mom, God bless you, and thank God for that. These statistics do not indicate that every boy that grows up without a dad is going to drop out of school and get a girl pregnant and get arrested for crime. Not at all. But it is a warning to us that the issue of a father is very, very important. And the absence of a father puts a boy significantly at risk. And so if you are the mother of a young boy without a father in the home, without a dad living right there, just understand he is at risk. Now, thanks be to God, not everyone at risk falls into the victim category or, in that matter, the perpetrator category. But it does remind us once again that we bear the responsibility to talk about these things and to face the truth squarely. And so my hope is that in raising these issues and discussing them, first of all, Christians especially will be convinced once again that God's plan for the organization of our lives into marriage and into families with all the responsibilities of parenthood, motherhood, and yes, fatherhood, that that this is God's clearest way to us for happiness on earth in terms of how we organize ourselves together, how we raise children, how we develop romantic relationships and all the rest. I think another step back from that is the responsibility that moms with boys without dads need to take the responsibility to make sure that the right kind of male influences come into that boy's life and that someone is there as a man for that boy. If you're raising a boy as a single mom, God bless you. God give you strength and joy and courage and great, great happiness and satisfaction in the midst of this. But let's encourage each other to do all that we can do to show the glory of God in this fallen world. I'll be back tomorrow. I'm Albert Mohler.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.